All right, on the line, we got Adam Mills from Source Endurance Coaching. Adam, what's going on tonight?
Just recently finished up Belgian Waffle Ride Survival Camp.
You guys survive out there? You guys got a little weather out there, it looked like.
We did. Pretty much everyone did. Not every electronic device made it through the trip. But it was a lot of fun.
This looks like yours made it through, though. Had some phone issues over there?
My phone spent Saturday and Sunday in the bottom of a creek and was recovered on Monday.
Okay, A, how does that happen? And B, how does it get recovered 2 days later?
So it fell out of my pocket. There is a beautiful video on Facebook that was posted by Pure Gravel, I believe, as I was crossing the creek.
Is that the creek that kind of infamous? There's always the photos from, and like people sometimes fall in it, sometimes
Right.
make it through that creek.
Exactly.
That creek looked kind of
And
full too.
I know it was a little bit high. And on Monday after the camp, we had a guy from the camp ride that same stretch, and he saw my phone buried in what was just a bunch of sand and gravel. So recovered
And
it,
it
turned
was
it on, and it
still
worked.
underwater.
No
That's
longer
amazing.
underwater. Yeah, spent 2 days underwater and still worked on Monday. So that was amazing.
That's pretty amazing. Oh, good time. So, all right, so how was the camp? 3 days. How many times have you done that now?
We just finished our fourth year of the camp.
Okay.
3 days, roughly 14 to 16 hours of riding, 150-ish miles, and way too much climbing to be recommended.
Was is the camp, has it always kind of been like the similar iteration of kind of what you've done from year one, or has it changed a little bit, or is it kind of just kind of like you got your like little formula down on how you want to do it?
So the idea of the camp is that at Belgian Waffle Ride, the main event, everything is just a lot. It's a lot of everything, a lot of hype, a lot of waffles, a lot of Lost Abbey beer. And people tend to forget that Lost Abbey Brewery is just a brewery 364 days a year. And they forget that, oh, this section of dirt is actually really manageable, but I'm in a giant mob of people and you just forget everything. You know, you lose your head. And so we wanted to take 3 days to do most, if not all, of the Belgian Waffle Ride course and show everyone what everything looks like at a more relaxed pace, where you can look around and enjoy the scenery and look off the canyon wall of Black Canyon and say that's amazing and it's beautiful, instead of just concentrating on how much you're suffering. And I think we got it down pretty good now. We always try to improve, and even from year one to year now, we have made a lot of improvements, and I think everyone is enjoying the weekend because of it.
So for the person that doesn't go, because you limit it to what, 28, 30
25.
people or so? 25 people?
25,
Okay.
yeah.
And there's 1,000, 1,500 plus or so that do BWR. Like what, besides like riding the course and learning it, like what else is kind of involved with camp when they come and check it out for those 3 days?
So they check in, and we give them a goodie bag from all of our camp partners. And then we do a quick ride on Friday. We go to Lost Abbey Brewery, do our first climb at Double Peak, have a route unveiling sort of banquet dinner in the evening, where Michael, the creator of the ride, and Phil Tinsman, one of the co-owners, along with Michael, talk about the event and how it's evolved, and can tell us kind of the stories that we don't even have a clue of what happens. Like Michael likes to talk about a sector of road that, you know, they just rode one day and thought it was fun, like one of the first years, and then they figured out after the first edition of the event, you have to have a permit for it, or you know, little tidbits like that, or why he really likes some of the sectors of dirt. And you get to kind of pick Michael's brain for 3 days, and it's a lot of fun, and learn how to ride dirt better because we have some fantastic instructors.
That's rad. So, like, moving forward, do you see this, like, evolving into, you know, maybe multiple more camps throughout the year? Are you going to kind of, like, keep it as, like, the staple, as, like, kind of the pre-VWR ride? Or, you know, I've talked to a few people that have done it, and they're pretty stoked on it. And, you know, I've always heard people ask that they, like, or say they want to do more of this kind of stuff.
So we, with Source Endurance, we do a couple of other camps, whether it's just gravel riding, or we're doing a Criterium camp, and then some other events. As far as the survival camp with Belgian Waffle Ride, we've pondered scaling it and making it bigger, but our battle is always, how do we do that and maintain that intimate feel with the event owners, and keep high quality instructors and have enough of them. And it's just all logistical and whatever we have to deal with. And, you know, we're always working to make it better, and we'll see where it goes.
Speaking of, like, instructors and stuff, like, other than obviously the 25 riders that come, who else was there at camp, you know, other than just, like, the 25 riders and, like, Michael, you know, like, what other instructors do come out, or what companies did you have, you know, that were out there for the 3 days?
So, the camp is also a marketing campaign kickoff in a lot of ways. Over the years, we've had fantastic instructors. We had started off with the king of the dirty Kanza, Dan Hughes, was kind enough to come out and lend us his knowledge and expertise. We've had the marvelous Janelle Holcomb out as an instructor. Neil Shirley has been there every year as a staple of the event. And now we have another coach, Zach Allison, who's been out there with us, as well as Whitney, who's a professional with the Hoggins Berman Supermint team, was an instructor with us this year. We had a bunch of partners come along and do their diligence as far as connecting with the campers. Canyon had demo bikes and had some people doing participating in the camp to kind of answer any and all questions about their bikes and helping people to decide which bike was best for them. IRC Tires was fantastic and connected every camper with a fresh set of tires for the camp. And they had people out there to help with anything that would have gone awry, which was very, very little, as well as to offer any advice. Envy Wheels had demo wheels available for riders to ride. Chamois Butter did not have anyone at the camp, but they've been a solid supporter over the years. Who else had riders? Peloton Magazine had a media crew out there filming and taking photos, as well as Danny Munson was a photographer that we hired to come out and make everybody look good and give everyone some solid photographs to take home and to, you know, print out and put on their wall and say, look what I did. This was awesome. There's obviously more I'm forgetting, but.
Speaking of which, I saw that it was pretty cool to see Brad Huff out there.
Brad Huff from AMP Human Performance
he's on the other side of cycling things now.
Yes, it's good to see him taking a walk in your shoes, so to speak, John. the retirement life and living the good life, and he's working with AMP Human Performance now, providing some product to every camper, and including himself, and, you know, really had a fun time and got to show off his wheelie skills too.
Yeah, I've seen some videos of him doing some wheelies up Double Peak. Him and Tinsman just tearing it up. I'm sure there's not too many people that can pull that one off. I know I sure can't. But yeah. No, it was cool to see, like, a solid group of, you know, former racers, you know, good industry people, and then just like solid camp guys that just all wanted to have a good time. Looked like a fun crew for sure.
Absolutely. So, well, and the campers can learn so much just by talking to all the camp supporters. They've all been there and done that, and they all have advice they can share. And it's all just really fun and amazing, and watching everybody come together.
Yeah, like speaking on that, you know, you've done this camp 4 years. You're obviously a coach, so you probably get asked, you know, all questions all day. Like, looking at the camp in an overview for like the 3 days, what do you think is like the most consistent or like popular question that you see coming from people, like in regards to BWR?
The biggest question we get is, do you think I'm fit enough to do the waffle, or should I do the wafer? And my answer is, it's in January is when the camp is, and the event this year is in May. So this is a reconnaissance training camp. So if you're not ready for the waffle today, you have time to get ready for it. And that's what we do. And that's what we're really good at. We've worked with clients anywhere from coming off the couch to doing Seattle to Portland 200-ish miles to working with professional athletes that have gone to the UCI Road World Championships and everything in between. And so that's what we do, and we do it well. And people asking questions of, can I do this or that? And the answer is absolutely. You just did survival camp. Like the game day, the main event day is in a lot of ways almost easier, because once you start, the show goes on, and you either make it home or the chupacabras get you when the sun goes down. I don't know. I think everyone makes it back.
Well, let's hope so. So let's kind of give like the listener like an example. So let's say I came out to camp, you know, I'm from the East Coast. It's January. I've never done the waffle. I want to. I'm nervous. I don't know if I can get the miles in because it's snowing at home, and I have a 9-to-5, and I have kids and a wife, and I have a trainer in my basement. But it's like, can I do this? Can I not? Like, and I go like, you know, Adam, like Coach Adam, come on now. Like, I'm a little nervous. I don't know if I can pull this off my current predicament back at home. What do I do?
So in a lot of ways, John, you just described like 80% of our clientele are 9-to-5 working individuals that have, you know, roughly 6 to 12 hours a week to train, and they just need to make sure what they're doing is the most efficient. So we would get them on a program that just looks at their lifestyle and their family and work commitments and what they can reasonably do for training and preparation. And we would work within those means and you know, have their goals in mind and get them as ready as we can. You know, everyone has limiters. We have clients that say, I would love to train 15 or 16 hours a week, but I really like being married a lot more. And so that's something that we take into account, is everyone has limiters, and you can do a lot with 6 to even 8 hours a week.
Where do you think is like the cutoff to, like, let's say that average, you know, kind of Joe person, to where, you know, we're in January, so we do have some time right now, but like, when do you think it's like, maybe like, all right, you know what, it's a little close, like, let's keep it to the wafer for you? Or where do you go like, yeah, you still got a little bit more time, you can pull it off training wise?
I mean, I always say that earlier you start, the better you're going to be, because the more comprehensive we can develop your ability in a more comprehensive manner. So if you start in March, looking at May, it's going to be a little tight. You can probably pull off the waiver successfully. The waffle might be kind of touch and go. It just depends on the individual. But for most people, if they start even this week or even by the end of you know, I would say by the end of February, you'd probably be pretty safe. But then it just takes consistency and commitment and dedication and honesty, honest to yourself and honest to your family and honest to your coach, and you can make it happen.
So like, how many like BWRs have you done? Have you done it since the beginning?
I've done three. No, I did not live out here when it started. I moved San Diego in like the end of 2014. 2015, I heard about this event, but I didn't know enough about it to really convince me to do it, which is my own fault. And it wasn't until after the event in 2015 where I thought, man, that thing, I missed it. That looked really fun. And then I've done it every year since.
16, 17, 18.
Right.
So looking at like the VWR in its current form, how you've seen it evolved even in the short 3 years, you've also got, you know, a pretty extensive racing background. Where do you feel like the VWR kind of sits against, you know, like, I mean, there's so many different ways to go about this question. Like, you know, the current domestic racing scene, kind of how that's starting to dwindle a little bit, but then these events are getting bigger and bigger. And do you right. see it like kind of like them two coming together, or do you still kind of see this as like where it's not fully racing style, it's more kind of for the average Joe, bucket list item maybe, but the weekend warrior? Like, it's just kind of like, I feel like it's just such a weird, not weird, but different dynamic now. And every year it kind of seems to be getting closer and closer.
I would say it's a unique event for sure. I know Michael modeled it off of Paris-Roubaix, and I don't know any individual who's would ever enjoy riding Paris-Roubaix on any given day, except maybe the winner. You know, I think if it was a full-on UCI road race, it would be mayhem and craziness, and a lot of people would go home disappointed and upset and possibly even crying. And they would all go home in utter amazement of what an event like that has to offer. If you look at the winners of the event, both men and women, you know, you can't say that people who weren't worthy won the event or were first. They're all amazing athletes. Every winner, even top three every year, are amazing. And, you know, you take a guy like Neil Shirley, who's won two of them, and you think, oh, well, he's won two. That's not a big deal. It wasn't a road race or whatever. But Neil's also been second place at US Pro Road Championships. So that's the kind of athlete it takes to be first across the line at Belgian Waffle Ride. And let's not forget that, because it's so hard and it's so different. And I would love to see it be on a calendar, on a road race calendar someday.
Do you think if that was the case, though, like, this is where I get a little, like, just curious on how this is going to evolve, because that's, I mean, I think this landscape is currently evolving. Like, you know, if it does it fit on a race calendar, you know, because, like, does that turn it into like a category race, you know, where it's like a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and a pro, or like, does this model keep growing and evolving where this is, you know, I look at this essentially as like a marathon running model where it's like, you know, you have your top pros going there. Then you also have your everyday person all competing on the same course, essentially at the same time.
Right.
Does that model like this fit in like the current road race calendar structure, or does like something new just evolve?
So that's really an interesting analogy you made, because the current way the road race calendars in North America are set is you can't have something like the Boston Marathon. And I don't think that's realistic to keep pushing what is the structure the way it's happening now. Otherwise, you're going to see the scales tip further and further. I think they have to become one and the same, like the Boston Marathon model. And you're right, the Belgian Waffle Ride will never be an event like a UCI road race that's standalone, or a PRT race in the US calendar. But the event's not going to change because it's amazing. It's very successful and there's no reason for it to change. I think the road race model is going to have to change to adapt to those events, to allow for those events, because those events aren't going to change to allow for the racing, because it won't make sense for it.
Yeah. Cause I mean, at the end of the day, like, I think most people kind of know, you know, I think they have an idea of where they stand, you know, like, sure, you have in what, maybe 5-10% people show up at BWR, they want to race it and they want to go for a top 10 finish. But then you have, you know, another percentage that want to race it, but they want to race it to beat 8 hours, you know? So maybe that doesn't really exactly go to like a top, top finishing of like, you know, 20 or a top 50, but it's like, oh, I beat this. And last year I was like, I shaved like 30 minutes off, which I think kind of resembles a marathon style almost. Or, you know, I made it through with like no issues, you know, I made it through that, you know, that section with no flats this year and last time I had a walk. So I think it's like almost like people have like, there's those little victories and, you know, maybe that's what brings everyone together as a whole to at the end of the day, keep, you know, growing cycling in the US on this kind of, you know, racing event style structure. But, you know, it's just, it's interesting because, you know, it's a definite change in landscape in the US. And it's one of the few things that I actually see that's growing, you know.
I would agree with you, and that's a great analysis of the way it's developing. And I haven't thought about it quite that way, but I think you're onto something there.
Well, I mean, you know, we've both been racing I haven't raced anymore, but we've raced around and like, you know, Cascade Classic is gone, right? I mean, you have these staple road races disappearing and other ones are dwindling. And, but then you have like this event, BWR, which is just growing and growing and, you know, hearing how many more people are signing up quicker and faster. And it's like, there's that buzz and hype around it. And, you know, I've heard of some, you know, world tour pros that are even going to be out there this year. And it's like, those guys couldn't even do a race on what was the NRC calendar when I was racing because of the ruling, but you know, that doesn't really apply here. So. No, well, it's just interesting.
To some degree, the pros are asking for forgiveness and not permission, too.
Yeah, no, totally. No, it's just interesting. So moving on from that, with you being, you know, you're a coach, you've got a wealth of knowledge from either nutrition to racing to training. Let's wrap this up by you breaking down your top three best tips for someone to compete or, you know, come out and race or ride or just get through the Belgian Waffle Ride, whether that's, you know, nutrition based, training based, or, you know, mental based, you know, how to get through this day. Let's look at like the big picture. Let's look at the waffle. Let's just break that thing down. What are your three tips to get through the waffle?
So it's
putting you on the spot.
Right. So I think the most important tip is to find a mentor or a coach to act as a guide. And that's sort of a personal plug, but there's in more ways than one that'll save you almost always. So, someone like a Source Endurance coach can guarantee that you're going to be fit enough to make it happen. And they can help head off a lot of the typical pitfalls. So that would be the first and foremost. I believe the second one is make sure you have the right equipment. Like probably even 3 or 4 years ago, there was a lot of road bikes out there. And last year I noticed there was a lot of gravel bikes with disc brakes and tires got a little bit wider and people got a little bit more mellow about the dirt because of the equipment they're using. And so the equipment matters a lot. And then third is, you know, I think the probably pretty generic advice, but also the biggest reason people don't finish the Belgian Waffle Ride is because they stop too long. Keep your stops to less than 5 minutes. Because every minute you're not moving is a minute you're not moving. And when you're stopped, you're not getting any closer to the finish line. So. Those would be my three.
Actually, I'm going to add one more to that. I want to ask you because I want to kind of ask everyone that has done BWR and that has, you know, experience out there. Because I think this is such a vital point. What is your response or your advice to someone when they say, Adam, what bike do I ride?
The bike that you ride, I think, should be the bike that helps you minimize your weaknesses at the event. So for me, relatively speaking, my weakness is in the dirt relative to a lot of the people that I end up riding with every year, because that's just where we land. And so I adapted by riding a gravel bike that I like a lot, and my tires are a little bit wider. Someone like Phil Tinstman, who's a X Games downhiller medalist, I believe gold medalist, is going to be amazing in the dirt, and the dirt's not going to worry him, but he's going to want a light road bike to go uphill as fast as possible, because those are the people that he's going to be stuck with, right? And I'm not saying either one of our approaches are best for any individual, but they need to decide which approach is best for them and go with that equipment, get that bike.
That's kind of the general sense I've been getting too, is that you pick the bike that's right for you to get through it, and not so much what you think is right for like the course, because you can go either one way.
Right.
You know, you got to kind of be honest with yourself and real with yourself. Like, what's going to help me get through this, not what's best, what I think for that.
Right. I mean, a road bike could be great for me 90% of the time, but the 10% that it's not great, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be on the struggle bus.
Yeah, well, there'll be plenty of other people out there on the struggle bus as well.
Right.
All right, Adam, let's wrap this up. Got some, you know, more training to do. It's going to be right here before we know it. So I'm sure we'll get you back on here before this big day happens to pick your brain a little more on some tips and tricks to get us all through it. So, you know, appreciate all the info. Camp looked great. Looking forward to hitting that one again next year. And we will chat soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot, John, and we will see you out there, huh?
All right, Adam. Well, you have a good rest of your evening.
All right, you too.